Welcome to Opera Out of the Box, unpacking opera piece by piece. I'm your host, Brad Cresswell, and today we're looking at the last season of Toledo Opera and what we learned, some highlights, and what takeaways the opera team had after this past season. I'm joined by that team right now, the General Director of Toledo Opera, James Norman, the Artistic Director of Toledo Opera, Kevin Bilsma, and we also have the Development Officer, Leo Whitaker, with us. And I have a little fanfare for you, as well as a Toledo Opera quiz a little bit later on, so you can worry about that now. But here's your fanfare, music first.
Yeah, I like that.
I would like that played every time I enter a room, please.
Yes,
yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice applause.
Very nice.
Yeah. The reviews are in. So let's start with the most basic of questions. I mean, how was the season? Was it successful? And why was it successful? Leah, you want to jump in?
Sure. I mean, I'm the newbie to the group. This is the end of my second year with the opera. And when I first joined the company, I had not seen a full opera production in person. I just, you know, heard them on my Spotify playlists. And, you know, I have to say, after the second season, I have just really come to appreciate the history and depth of, yeah, and the layers that it takes to put something like this together, and how detailed every layer is, not only from, you know, learning about the history of the librettist or the culture or the time and the political things, but also just down to costuming and stage movement that I've been able to observe. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's...
You've had an education, so to speak.
It's a rich environment to yeah, live and work in, I would say.
Well, we're going to dive deeper into that a little bit later on. But first, I want to hear from Kevin and from James. I mean, we can agree that it was a successful season, right?
It was a very successful season, absolutely.
And what made it that way?
I think the new energy around the company with Kevin and I taking over has, I think, spurred a lot of excitement. And yeah, I think choosing Tosca and South Pacific, a grand musical, really excited both opera lovers and, let's say, not so opera lovers who like musicals. I mean, we have those as well. Yeah. And I think, you know, we were, I believe, at 86% sold for Tosca and 92% for South Pacific. So wow, that's a great season for us as far as audience. And I think artistically it was one of our strongest that we've had since Kevin and I have been back with the company, which is many years. It just, we had great singers and wonderful directors and conductors. Yeah. And, you know, to give kudos to Kevin, the chorus is at its highest level. I think every year they set a new standard, which is amazing. I don't know how far more we can go, but
I, Kevin, don't know you either. Thanks for setting me up, Jim. Yeah.
But, you know, it's just overall, I think it was a very strong season that we're very happy to have come off with.
Yeah, that was James Norman. Let's hear from Kevin. We heard about you. Now we want to hear from you.
I could not agree with Jim more about this. I think artistically it was one of the highest seasons we have experienced in Toledo. Amazing singing, you know, beautiful direction, sets, costumes, everything about it, orchestra. It all, everything came together this year. And I think we're all exhausted, but a happy exhaustion, because we've really accomplished so much, not just on stage, but behind the scenes, with development, with expanding the audiences of Toledo Opera. I think it's just been really, really incredible.
If I can just say that Lee and I met with a potential board member who has now been voted, will be joining us next month. And he lived in Washington for many years and moved back to Toledo on purpose because he likes the city. And when we met with him, he said, the thing I love the most about Toledo Opera is you punch above your weight.
Yeah. Mm.
He said that the Tosca production was better than anything he had seen at Washington National, which, you know, they're two budget levels above us. So I will take that compliment every day.
Absolutely. Well, I want to go back a little bit. Something that you said about last season, you know, you did South Pacific. it fit in the role of a musical, but it kind of lives in amorphous territory there. A lot of opera companies are doing more musicals. Mm-hmm. I wonder, what does that bode for Toledo Opera in the future? Do you see more musicals on the bill?
Absolutely. I think that in these trying times in the arts, we have to expand our audience in as many ways as we can. And right now we only have two productions a year. I'd love to get back to three productions, but that's going to take, you know, some major funding, which is not available right now. But yeah. If we could get back to three, I would do a musical every year, because, like I said, they are popular for those that don't just love opera. But we're not going to do, you know, just any musical. We're never going to do Annie. Not that, you know, it's a hard knock life, but we're going to do musicals that are on the operatic scale, like Ragtime, like South Pacific, A Kiss Me, Kate, or
that
things like that.
Require real singers.
Exactly, exactly. And Kevin and I are, you know, there's some things in the plans that are in our 3-year to 5-year plan that we've already talked about that I think people will be happy. But like I said, we're just going to go on those that need real singers and are of an operatic scale that tell a good tale.
Kevin, let me ask you, what has been your proudest collaborative moment from last season, speaking specifically to the operas you did last year, Tosca and South Pacific?
I love Tosca, first of all, but especially the finale of Act One, the big Te Deum scene. And to me, that was the collaboration. I mean, it is the collaboration of all opera, but also of our season. The scene is so dramatically powerful. You have the entire chorus, you have the children's chorus, you have the orchestra playing up a storm, you have Scarpia, you know, forsaking God for Tosca, and this incredible scenery that we had. I just thought everything worked so magically that was like the magic moment for me.
Yeah, we're going to give you a little happy bell there.
Yeah, happy
the soundboard is back.
How we've missed it.
Yeah, right. How do you select the operas? I mean, how is that done?
Fist fights? No. Both Jim and I have favorites. And we kind of, you know, look at what we've produced in the last 10 to 20 years. We look at what are, you know, the most popular operas that are being presented throughout the United States. And we kind of, because I've lived in Toledo now for over 20 years, and Jim is a native, we kind of get to know our Toledo opera going public and our Toledo natives, and we know what people will like, what people will come to. And we kind of balance all those things and come up with what we think is the most, a season that will sell well, but that will also be very artistically satisfying. Without a doubt, I mean, Tosca and South Pacific achieved that this year.
You've also done operas that most people are not familiar with, either because they're new or they haven't been done in Toledo before. How do you balance those popular classics? And Jim, this is for you, with lesser known or contemporary works. How do you balance that? How do you fit that into the equation, as it were?
Very carefully. Newer works are not as popular in Toledo as they are, say, in New York, Chicago, or Detroit, which are more major cities. And right now, with arts funding the way it is, we have to be very, very careful. So I don't know that we're going to take chances as much as we have in the past on unknown works, because Toledo is, it doesn't matter if it's opera, musicals, plays, you name it, people will go to see something that they know the title to or have seen it before. Yeah. So it's going to be, I would say, a few years of conservative choices. And I don't mean that politically, but I mean fiscally conservative, where we're choosing things that we think that we can sell. I mean, we can't have 50% houses. We've got to be near 70 to 90% to make budgets work, because obviously ticket sales only, you know, cover about 30% of the production cost. So that's a big thing. And I would love to be able to do more things, but when you were only doing two productions, it's kind of hard to go, oh, here's this brand new one that we're going to take a chance on. That could kill us and be a fatal blow. So yeah, but like I said, we're going to mix it up. There's going to be, you know, grand opera, there's going to be musicals, there's going to be operettas. So stay tuned. We've got things in store for you.
I'm curious what you look for when you're engaging conductors or directors, aside from singers, right? We've talked about singers, but how do you find various conductors and various directors? They seem to keep repeating.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do bring back people that we like working with that are good with singers, good with the chorus, you know, because people, everybody has an opinion and yeah. we hear it. So if someone doesn't like someone, we take that into account. And it's also, you know, how are they working together? Yeah. Does this conductor work with this director and vice versa? So we will bring those back that we enjoy, and we're trying to branch out. We have a new director coming in for Elixir in February. His name is Ian Silverman, a young director up and coming. So we just try him out, and we get inquiries all the time, and you know, it's a Zoom call, and then you kind of check up and say, okay, where have you worked? And you call that opera company and say, what did you think? Did you like them? And sometimes that works out, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Education is a big part of what you do with community yes. outreach. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what you did this past season for community outreach and
well,
engagement.
I have to give props to Leah because mm-hmm. Leah really...
hi, Leah.
Hi.
headed up
I
that...
I can talk about this.
The headed yeah. up that process, and we had amazing community programming, especially for South Pacific, and she really delved into that programming through all kinds of different venues. It was amazing, and she can go into it a little bit more about what programming we actually did and how heartfelt it was. I'm thinking of the Roots and Routes that we did mm-hmm. at the library, which was a full room. It was, I believe, live broadcast here. And there, I don't think there was a dry eye in the house when yeah. those ladies were talking about about their experiences.
I mean, I come from a pretty strong education background, and, you know, the company has historically done a lot for children in the community, and we have, you know, our flagship education program is very much rooted in very successful arts programming for kids. And so I can't talk about this without first mentioning Opera on Wheels and bringing live opera into schools that, you know, at this time are, you know, I have art teacher friends who teach out of carts if they're lucky. So, you know, for many teachers, this is their professional development for the year. This is their field trip for the year. And we have the resources. And partly because we are down to two productions, we have a lot more scheduling flexibility to do that really very important youth education programming. So
we see 60 schools and about 22,000 students
yes.
between the fall and the spring tours. So yeah. that's a lot more than the adults that we see. So
that's amazing.
But,
yeah.
you know, one of the things that I've learned is that, you know, the best way I think, you know, we can grow our audience is when we get families together experiencing the art form. So my sort of job in this programming has been to, you know, find a way to bring kids, their parents and grandparents together, not just on the main stage, but some other things. And, you know, you and I, Brad, have done this podcast together. So I would say that's a community education outreach
yeah.
and the way that we've engaged various experts from all over the country. I mean, we had one of the world's leading military historians from The Ohio State University
right.
drive up to Toledo.
I learned so much
I know.
During that episode. I've forgotten it all. But
I know. I know. I mean, it's made for great dinner conversation with friends and family, just what we've done on the podcast. But then we brought all of our, you know, as much as we can on the podcast and through all of these acquaintances into public programming formats that we did, you know, specific outreach to veterans to talk about specific issues in the veterans community in Toledo and how the arts has some overlaps there and maybe can help, you know, plug in some pieces in our community for services. Jim mentioned our Roots and Routes when we, you know, we made friends with the brand new General Council of Japan out of Detroit,
yeah.
who's been back to Toledo and counts us as one of his cultural arts organizations in his network. So we've been incredibly grateful for these connections and how we've, you know, just interested people into the art form based on their expertise and how we've been able to tell a fuller story through yeah. all these programs. So,
have you guys learned anything from these educational programs? I mean, you're doing community outreach. I wonder if it blows backwards to you. Leah, you want to continue with that?
One of the sort of the things that I learned, I can't, you know, the stories that came from Bob Masters, our 99-year-old
yeah.
Veteran who served aboard the USS Enterprise in the South Pacific.
And was on a podcast.
And he and I are friends now. I go and visit him and you know, I've learned some things from him just as a person of that age who's seen so much and has given me a lot of perspective.
Yeah.
And as somebody who's that at that age and has lived so long, and to have him be so supportive of what we do through the arts and the way it helps people has given me a lot of, you know, personal meaning and confidence in yeah. my job. Like Mary Commodoy, our friend from Detroit, and the yeah. way that she just never kept her, I mean, her whole life story is about don't stay quiet, speak up, you know, and she's all of like 4 foot eight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And she did. And, you know, I think it's the personal stories, maybe not so much the history lessons. I mean, I did learn a great thing about the history of eugenics through the librettist of Tosca and how, you know, the science, the wow. scientific movement. I mean, you can really trace the eugenics into mm-hmm. Italian fascist theory and then World War II. I mean, and bada bing, bada boom, here we are.
Yeah.
So, you know, the world is a lot smaller when you look at it through the lens of
absolutely.
Opera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin, you have something to say?
Yeah.
About that?
I guess my takeaway from it is how much more we have yet to do.
Mm-hmm.
We did a wonderful family fun day in Rossford a few weeks back, and a lot of families came through. We were part of a scavenger hunt, and so families would have to like come to our table to get, you know, us to sign their little piece of paper so they could win a prize. And there was a young mother who came up with her daughter and was looking at all of our materials and goes, I've lived in Toledo all of my life. How did I not know that we had an opera company?
Mm.
And I said, well, you know, we have these resident artists that go into schools. And in fact, they're performing right next to you right now. Right now, they're doing a performance of Beauty and the Beast in schools. And all of a sudden, she stopped, looked at her daughter and said, didn't you tell me that you had the Beauty and the Beast people at your school? And she goes, yeah. And she looked over, and those were the same ones.
Yeah.
And she said she has not been able to stop talking about it.
Yeah.
But the fact that her mother had never known that there was an opera company that produced not just children's programming, but also opera for adults, community outreach. So there's still so much to do. I mean,
yeah.
we are a small town, but we're large enough that we really need to get the word out that opera is strong in Toledo and that the creative process is extremely strong.
Mm-hmm. James, you're nodding your head in agreement with Kevin. I wonder if you have anything to add to what he said.
Well, I it's so true. I think that there are people in Toledo that will say, oh, there's nothing to do in Toledo. And to them, I say, open your eyes and maybe Google some things.
Put down the
there's
phone.
So much fun in Toledo between, you know, the art museums and the Metroplex and the zoo and all things. And the opera company, we have so much to do. And I think it's crucial for us to get out there with our opera around town, where we go to the Metro Parks and other libraries and things and sing. And people go, oh, wow, that's really good. And my gosh, those singers are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're bringing quality to Toledo. You know, we may be a smaller town with a smaller budget, but we can, you know, we can have a Catherine Lewick or, you know, a Raven Taylor coming to Toledo to sing.
Yeah.
That's what we're all about.
Yeah, that's great. Well, speaking of Toledo Opera, and that's what we're doing here, is talking about Toledo Opera, I do have a quiz is about Toledo Opera.
Oh, gosh.
So,
all
no pressure.
Very competitive.
No pressure.
I didn't study, though.
Yeah.
This is a multiple choice quiz, and some of the questions are pretty easy for you guys, definitely. I think that I've got 20 questions here. I think that we'll use only 10 to start with, and then maybe we'll get to the later ones, depending on how you do.
Yeah.
I have a little music here that'll get us started. When was Toledo Opera founded? Was
1959.
It? I didn't even get to say the
ding,
choices.
Ding, ding.
Yeah, you get that, definitely.
Nor did he get to call on anyone to answer
yet. That's right.
Jim.
Oh, I was just going.
So what is the name of the primary performance venue for Toledo Opera? Is it the Valentine? Is it the Huntington Center? Or is it the Stranahan Theater?
The Valentine Theater.
Yeah, you win that. Which of the following is a well-known outreach program run by Toledo Opera? Is it Opera on Tap, An Opera is a Story, or Backstage Pass? An opera is a story.
But I like backstage.
Yeah, I bet people would like opera on tap too.
Well, it's already there. Yeah.
Oh, we have that?
No, we don't.
It's expensive to join.
Oh, yeah.
Any conversation we want to have about these questions is good. Right? Number four, what is the mission of Toledo Opera? Is it A, to produce only classical Italian operas?
No.
Is it B, to educate and entertain through high-quality opera performances? Or is it C, to promote musical theater in Northwest Ohio? A, B, or C?
B.
Yes. Which opera is most frequently performed by Toledo Opera in its entire history? Would it be Carmen, which you're doing next season? Would it be La Traviata, that's B, and C is Tosca, which you did last season?
I think it's D, none of the above.
It could very well be
I believe it's Madame Butterfly.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah. I've counted them up.
What was your
answer? My answer was, I don't know.
All of those are in the top ten.
Yeah. Out of that list, top five. I would probably say it's Traviata.
It's Carmen.
Is it Carmen?
I think Carmen's
really?
Number two from Butterfly.
Oh, okay. But I knew Butterfly
we have those
one.
Trivia nights, so yeah. That's why I know.
Okay.
I believe Madame Butterfly has been 11 times.
Yeah.
Really?
Which shocks me.
Yeah.
In the spirit of none of the above, all of the above.
Win.
Oh, boy.
Is our next question. Toledo Opera collaborates with which major Toledo cultural institution for educational programming? Would it be A, Toledo Metro Parks, B, Bowling Green State University, or C, WGTE Public Media?
All of the above!
Very good. Very good. You've got a 100% so far.
Yes.
What is one of the ways that Toledo Opera supports young artists? Is it through an international opera competition? That's A. Is it through a resident artist program? That is B. And C, is it online masterclasses only? A, B, or C?
It is B.
Resident artist program. Let me stop the music for a minute because I want to talk about the resident artist program. We had resident artists from last season come and talk with us. Mm-hmm. And that was an award-winning episode, by the way. It won a Touchstone Award.
Yeah, I was just asked this morning if we did an episode on this year's group, and we didn't do one this year for this group.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's in the future. Who wants to talk about the resident artists a little bit?
Well, the resident artist program, and then I'll let Kevin do, is, you know, it's something that I believe, no one can find the exact year we started, but I believe it's at least 40 years old. It's not something every opera company is doing anymore because it is expensive, but we feel it's our mission at Toledo Opera to give back to new singers, to take them from when they get their master's degree, get them some experience on stage with, you know, international directors and conductors and singers, and go on and, you know, do 1 or 2 years here. Yes, they do go out to the schools and perform a lot for children, but they also get opportunities on the main stage, master classes, singing around town. We just had them all sing the opera gala. So they're really getting a lot of performance opportunities, and I think they find that that is really valuable. I mean, when I started in the chorus back in whatever it was, I only stayed with it, wasn't really for the performing. It was, I would watch the director mostly because I was interested in directing, and I would just watch how that person worked with a chorus or the principals, because some directors are good moving crowds around and some aren't so good.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, you know, our resident artist program gives them, not only that experience, but the connections. And I think that, you know, Kevin and I are committed to bringing those resident artists back who are going on to careers. We have several that are coming back this next year. Sarah Bacani, who is a soprano this year, she's coming back for her second year of resident artist. She's going to see Micaela and Carmen. Brendan Boyle, who was a resident artist tenor years ago, sang last year in Tosca and is coming back as Don Jose and Carmen. So, you know, and I know that Brendan also got jobs out at Hawaii Opera Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his connection with the director that we brought in for Merry Widow. So that to us is satisfying, that we can launch, you know, the next generation of singers to careers and have agents and all of that.
You're not just an opera company. You're doing lots of stuff for the community and for people in general, aside from opera.
Yeah, and it's I just find it extraordinary because, I mean, we're smart, we're savvy, we're not all that smart. And how we get the people that we get for our resident artist program, to me, I'm just dumbfounded, because every year I think, oh, it's never going to be as good as what it was last year. And every year we get stronger and stronger performers. We get people that are more passionate about the work that they're doing, and more people that we want to bring back all the time. I mean, Robbie Razzo, who is our baritone from this season, will come back in two roles next year, two main stage roles. One is Morales and Carmen, and Belcore in L'Elysir. And we're just thrilled to see the amazing progress that these singers demonstrate throughout their time in Toledo, and how they endear themselves to our opera-going public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, board meeting the other night, the board was just ecstatic. The members who had come to the gala were ecstatic about the performances that these young artists did, saying, you know, it was one of the best galas because the resident artists sang. You know, we didn't have one big star singing. They sang throughout the night, and people were just stunned.
Well, I have to add something to that. You know, I haven't worked for other opera companies, but it does seem like this community really values this program, and that we are very welcoming, hospitable. We're a supportive community to young professionals in the music and the singing world. And it could be our, you know, Bowling Green has a wonderful music and vocal program. There's just a lot of people in the community and the audience also. You know, it's there are people their age who are also chorus members. It's a rich community, I think, to learn in as a young singer. You know, people can try things and grow. You know, we're not totally stuffy that, you know, we hate somebody if they are flat once, you know.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but, you know, I think we have a really hospitable community for this kind of a program. And it seems like from the beginning of a season to the end, watching these young people mature, not only on stage, but, you know, this year they were our fundraisers at times, and they were kind of learning a little bit about the business and how the arts is supported. And so, you know, hopefully without also kind of that exposure, they'll be much more stable or secure in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we try to, as a company, treat everyone like family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that is what's grown. Because when Kevin and I came back to the opera a few years ago, I think we would get maybe 80 people who would submit materials through YapTracker to audition. And now we're between 160 and 200 that are applying from across the nation.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tribute to the company and how they treat people and the experiences that we can give them. And it's amazing that, you know, opera's a small world, and these young singers do talk, and they'll say, well, you know, I knew so-and-so who was your resident artist a couple of years ago, and they had nothing but great things to say, and I really want to audition. So I think that's a testament to the company that, you know, we're treating people like family and like human beings.
Yeah. Leah, when you were talking about funding, I think we should just mention that you're having an ongoing curtain call campaign.
Yeah. Yep.
You want to tell us about that?
Sure, I'd love to. We are just 9 days till the end of our fiscal year, and we've had a great year. We've you know, we're in a really good place financially with our budget. Like Jim mentioned, we're trying to get back to two or three productions from two. So we're really depending on going forward a lot more individual support. I know the grant landscape has changed for a lot of nonprofit organizations.
Yeah.
And this is just our way to continue to rally support for the opera to make our budgeted goals so that we can enter every new season in the black, ready to get started with production bills and make sure that we have no hiccups, that we're all momentum, smooth sailing. That's we want to deliver a fine product, and that is going to take community support. So curtain call, even if you have given an extra little gift between now and May 31st, would be greatly appreciated. And if you haven't made your annual gift to the opera, now is the time to do it.
And you can do that at ToledoOpera.org.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. All right.
You can flag me down in the street. Give me a check.
Yes, you can.
Let me see what I have in my wallet.
Okay, thank you, Brad. Brad is a donor to the Toledo Opera.
Yes,
thank you, Brad.
Yes. I want to continue with my quiz here with a question about the Valentine Theater. What is unique about the Valentine Theater that you perform in often? A, it's an outdoor venue. B, it dates back to the 19th century and has been restored. Or C, it was originally a movie theater. What is unique about it?
A, B.
B.
It's B.
B. Okay.
You opened in 1895. Your perfect record.
Why is Toledo Opera significant to the region? It is Ohio's only opera company. B, it is one of the longest running regional opera companies in the U.S. Or C, it only performs world premieres.
Could you imagine?
B.
Yeah. B. It seems B is a common thread here.
I think so.
All right. Who was the founding general director of Toledo Opera, and what other opera company did he also found in Ohio? Was it Lester Freeman? Was it James Norman? Or was it Joseph Hawthorne?
Lester Freeman.
Lester Freeman. Hawthorne, do you know the city that...
I believe it was Dayton.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
They used to do co-productions between Toledo and Dayton.
Yeah. These next ones we've already covered. It's all about Opera on Wheels. What is the primary goal of Toledo Opera's Opera on Wheels program? Is it A, broadcasting performances? Is it B, bringing opera to schools and communities? Or is it C, hosting operatic competitions?
B. B as in Brad.
Yes.
I may have had some input into the answers being B. Toledo Opera's 2021 production of I Dream told the story of A, Mahalia Jackson, B, Harriet Tubman, or C, Martin Luther King Jr.?
C.
Yeah, Martin Luther King Jr. Boy, we're almost to the end here with a perfect score so far.
Keep it up, everybody.
All the pressure.
Which of the following composer's works have not been performed by Toledo Opera as of 2025? Is it the composer Giacomo Puccini, or Giuseppe Verdi, or Philip Glass? C.
Philip Glass.
Yeah. Any plans to do that?
I don't think
right
that's
now.
On our list.
Does he write opera?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He's written
substantially.
A lot of
opera. Yeah.
And Dennis Russell Davies is from Toledo.
He is.
He's conducted a lot of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. In addition to performances, Toledo Opera also offers A, summer camps for singers, B, lectures and community conversations, including our podcasts, or is it free acting classes? A, B, or C?
B.
Yeah. I have you trained to say that perfectly. Yeah.
Our plosive consonants very good.
Okay. Which famous American opera did Toledo Opera stage in 2023 to critical acclaim? Was it A, Blue? Was it B, Porgy and Bess? Or was it C, Susanna?
Blue.
Yeah.
Because it starts with B.
Not B. But the next one finishes out the B's here. In the 2023-24 season, which real-life couple starred as Romeo and Juliet?
Aww.
Was it Brendan Boyle and Claire Lydon? That's an interesting pairing.
That would be a cute couple.
Was it Zach Borchewski and Catherine Lewick? They're B, by the way. Or was it David Walton and Marnie Breckenridge, who is coming to Toledo Opera next year?
For Elixir, yes.
Yeah.
It would be B.
Very good. Very good. Okay, let me take out that quiz music. And we'll move on with our podcast. Now, we're talking about Toledo Opera, but we're also getting a little backstage insight. And I wonder if you can talk about maybe things that people don't know about the opera. What is the one thing you would say that people don't know or don't realize is as complicated as it is, right?
I think the biggest thing, and we've been trying to educate, again, our audiences, is that these are not tours. This is not the national tour of Cats coming through and now they're going to go on to Memphis or wherever.
I laughed, I cried.
Exactly. The productions that Toledo Opera does are unique to Toledo. Not only the sets and costumes and props, but the singers, everything is new to Toledo. So this isn't something that we pack up on Sunday afternoon after the opera and it goes off to Indianapolis. This is something that you will never see again, because you're never going to see that group of singers with our chorus, with the costumes and sets that we rent. So it's something that Kevin and I and the team at Toledo Opera put together piece by piece, singer by singer, you know, prop by prop, and costume by costume.
Wow. Anybody else want to chime in?
No, that's brilliant. And that's, I mean, the number of times that I've heard, oh, yeah, we saw, you know, we see that South Pacific is coming through Toledo. It's like, well, no, it originated here. This was our show. This was our production of this work. And it's something that does take a lot of education, a lot of just talking frankly about what goes on in an opera company. So
And we do it all in 3 weeks.
We do it all in 3 weeks.
I feel like I could just answer this question. I've learned so much this year. I'm a newbie. As a fundraiser, I have to say one of our biggest learning lessons this year has been how the cost of an individual's ticket, how far that goes to paying for everything that they will see on stage in that fleeting moment, that 3 hour period of their life, how much, you know, the average ticket cost is, you know, about $119 for a really good seat. And it costs close to $600 for that show to go on per individual. So I think that goes to me saying also that, you know, opera has this misfortune of being classified as an elitist institution or an elitist art form. I feel like that's one of the biggest learning lessons that you come to appreciate. Not only that the artists themselves are not elite, and, you know, their talent is elite for sure. Their prep work, their discipline is elite, but they themselves and their attitude and their appreciation for beauty and creativity is not. And also the people who go to opera, they're there for the joy of an experience. They're there for their friendships. They're there for the art form, for, you know, filling their soul with joy. They're there for all sorts of reasons, but in no way is there any kind of material gain or status that is associated with that. So I just have to say, in its truest sense, it's an expensive art form, because the only way to do it is to do it well. And I think when you get that, you really feel like it's something worth valuing and keeping going. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my soapbox.
Right. Let's talk about challenges that Toledo Opera is facing. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the Valentine Theater. Do you have any challenges there in production as far as space or any of that?
Well, The wing space is rather tight.
it's an old vaudeville house.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We can't do the whole let's move the whole stage on from the right side to the left side like the Metropolitan can.
So when I'm conducting the offstage choruses,
they're really offstage.
They're really cramped up. That's an issue. I mean, we love Valentine Theater.
It's a perfect opera house.
I especially love it when we have a new artist come in and they walk in and they look up and their jaw just drops. It's the perfect jewel box.
Well, it's so different from when we used to perform at the Masonic, now called the Stranahan, and I'm old enough that I was performing on that stage and people would walk out and go, oh boy, this is a big sing. And now they walk out on the Valentine and go, oh, I can actually sing piano and it'll sound like
that. I can do whatever I want to do, and it will read and it will carry. That's a brilliant thing.
Absolutely.
The pit is, we'll never be able to do Fanciulla, for example, or Salome without a reduced orchestra. But, these are small things.
I wish we could get free parking for our patrons.
Should we cut that?
Anybody out there have a parking lot? Leah would like to talk to you.
Yes.
That's one thing I would change. The parking for guest experience.
Totally.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about the pandemic, because it's still with us. I mean, did you learn or grow anything from the pandemic that you're still using? Zoom is a big thing that I use all the time here to talk to people. I wonder if there's something that you're still using in the capacity of Toledo Opera from the pandemic.
Opera Around Town. I mean, the Opera Outdoors program
was designed
to get opera out of an enclosed space so people could social distance
being
healthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, the success of that partnership with the Metro Parks and the other spaces that you all performed in before my time has evolved into a demand for, you know, what happens when the weather's bad? Well, we need to be indoors. So, I mean, there's been a demand that has grown from that pandemic phase. And so it is, you know, from what I've seen, is the company has been agilely able to put a new type of program format together to get out into the community wherever there's a large enough space that people can gather and listen to singing.
And I think other than that, I think it's just made us a little more cautious that, you know, this the company and the art form are precious.
Yes.
And we can't take them for granted because in a nanosecond, they could be gone for 18 months. You know, luckily, we were able to come back a little bit sooner than Broadway and a few other things than some other cities who were doing opera. We were able to come back in the fall of 21. But it was a scary time. And I think it's also, it's changed the industry, especially with artists. They're taking better care of themselves. They're taking more time for them,
they're
which is important.
Their hands.
Well, they're sure definitely are. Washing their hands. Yeah. And, you know, we don't offer hospitality coffee anymore and have people surrounding that kind of thing. But I think it's really a good thing that the artists are taking better care of themselves and standing up for themselves and, you know, going, this is my livelihood and I need to take care.
Yeah. Also, I think that the artists themselves are taking ownership of their craft and also of their livelihood. The number of artists that we work with who are not managed
or self-managed.
Self-managed. Yeah. Exactly. I think has grown out of the pandemic that they... We, for example, we don't go to New York to hear singers. You know, singers submit materials to us. We work with a few management teams that give us people. A lot of it is word of mouth. I think more of it is word of mouth than ever it was before the pandemic. So, it's kind of a big change for us.
Well, this podcast is kind of, you know, I think the pandemic, I wasn't here for that, but it's taught every organization in the fundraising realm, you know, to look very closely at their future, you know, where their funds are going to come from in the future. And for the opera world, you know, the way subscriptions have changed, you know, and new audience members are now coming into the fold, I think it's making this company a lot more, you know, holding that subscriber. You know, we're very careful with our subscribers. We want to make sure they have the best experience and keep coming back every year. But we also want to attract new people. And if they just want to try one thing, you know, we're going to put on a great show. So I think it's also making the companies be really, like he said, careful, cautious, mindful of their resources. I think there's probably less waste all around and all kinds of nonprofits. Just, you know, like you said, it could just be gone in an instant.
Well, and I think that's why we're also branching out because we did South Pacific, which, like I said, sold at 92%. We haven't sold the opera that well in a long time since Carmen in 2018. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing quite a few, at least two dozen people that have bought subscriptions who had only attended South Pacific, but they're trying out the whole opera season next year. That to me is what's gratifying.
Well, there are two great operas that you have next year.
Yes,
exactly.
Carmen
and they're not all tragic. There's a little comedy in one of them.
Yes,
Carmen, right?
Yeah, right.
I also have to say, out of the pandemic, I think that while it's not really spoken about, the need for a different type of service. I think our society is looking to the arts, looking to other things to get real kind of the therapeutic healing from that time. So I think people are actually, who might have been resistant to trying a traditional art form to find soothing or you know, a moment of peace or a moment of joy, I think that people are desperate out there, and they're desperate to find something that's going to help them connect to their humanity, to put their phone down, to get away from hateful rhetoric. I think they're looking for safe places where they can get outside of their, you know, of their mind for a little bit. And I think the opera and these kinds of high cultural art forms provide a real value to, I mean, certainly a community like Toledo, but for everybody. You know, I think there's a lot of people who just need some healing that we didn't get as a country. And so I think the opera is uniquely positioned to, you know, be a salve for that.
Yeah. Jim, let me ask you one last question here. What excites you about the future of Toledo Opera? Where do you see it in a few years?
I'm excited about the variety that Kevin and I are thinking of offering as programming. I think that our audiences will be very excited about some of the things that we have planned, at least for the next three seasons. And I think that with our new energy and a renewed commitment to community programming, I think that I'm excited about bringing more Toledoans to the Valentine or to the Metro Parks to see Opera Around Town or wherever, just to share the art form with them. Because like Kevin said, there are people out there that don't know that Toledo has an opera, which, you know, in America, not every city our size has what we have culturally.
We don't
have a large museum, an opera company, a symphony company, or symphony. All of those things are really what makes cultural life in Toledo so rich, and I think that's what's exciting to me.
I lied when I said that was the last question. My last question is to all of you. We'll go one at a time. If you had unlimited resources, what is your fantasy football version of an opera? I mean, who would you get and what would it be? Let's start with you, Kevin.
Oh, boy, on the spot.
I'm just going to jump in here. Okay. I don't have a fantasy opera. I'm not that sophisticated. But I do have a fantasy vision of Toledo Opera that we can run productions year-round, that we have the financial resources to do things. I know, you know, we have parts of the year that we can't fit in programming, and there's some things that I would dearly love to be able to do. And if we had, you know, some crypto money, if anyone has Bitcoin or meme coins.
Yeah. Any oligarchs listening?
No, I'm dead serious though. Like if we did, you know, there's a lot of programming that we could have a 365-day calendar year where there's not, you know, no off season. We could have a bigger staff and a bigger production team. You know, where the seamstresses, like a tailoring workshop. You know, in a own laundry facility. Yeah, I mean, that would be pretty
Your cool. own bank, you have to do that.
No, I mean, oh, yeah, crypto exchange. You know, yeah. have that.
Oh, boy.
The opera coin, the meme coin.
Ooh.
Kevin?
Thanks for opening up that train of thought, Leah, because, yeah, I mean, I love too many operas to say, this is my dream opera and this is my dream cast. I would just love for us to be on a financial footing and for Toledo to be open to the possibilities of storytelling in a variety of operatic forms. Mm. I happen to love Baroque music. I would love to have the chance to produce a Semele of Handel, you know, in Toledo, or a Monteverdi opera.
You and I would go. You two would be there.
But yeah. I would love us to be in the position that we could offer an expanded season that would offer something for everybody. Yeah. You know, that I love the canon. I love the classics. I love Carmen, Les Lisières. I mean, fantastic operas. Tosca. Can never get enough of them. Yep. But to be able to be in a position to do a variety of things, do a musical a year, do a Baroque opera a year in a small setting, do some grand opera, do a contemporary piece, that to me, that would be a dream come true.
Yeah. And you have to think of the audience, of course.
Of course.
You know, how they're going to react.
And we're really careful about that. And, yeah. But I just really think that the more that we put out there, the more the audience will come.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I know it's a little field of dreams, but no, hey. You said dream.
Build that I opera house.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Jim.
I would love to, and I know it's a difficult one to do on the Valentine stage because it's not huge, but I would love to see Turandot fully staged.
Mm. Yeah.
But I'm not sure that we could fit that on this stage.
We could try.
Yeah.
Kevin and I are talking about it, but we'll see.
I was actually in that production of Turandot many years ago.
Semi-stage. Peristyle, yes. But I'd love to see a fully realized with enough chorus members that Kevin would be happy with the sound and, you know, we could find a set. That's always one of the biggest considerations that we have is, you know, we'll say an opera and I'll say, well, let me look and see if I can find a set that will fit on the Valentine stage. And, you know, luckily, more and more companies are downsizing their sets so that for economy to fit into one truck and one day of union work to put it up and take it down. So that could be a possibility in the future. So that's my dream.
Well, I would like to know what your highlights from
my favorite.
You know, yeah, I mean, you've been working with us this whole season.
Yeah.
And you've come to almost all of our events.
Yeah.
So, like, what's, you know, what if you, what's your...
What's my favorite opera? What's my
What's your
football?
Favorite moment from the Toledo operas? What's your top...
My March Madness.
Yeah, what's your top three top three takeaways from the opera this year?
I mean, I have had a long career in opera. I started as an opera singer. I mean, I've been singing since I was a boy, but I went into opera, and it's changed a lot in the years that I've spent in radio, the past 15 or 16 years. It's changed a lot, but I still keep in touch a little bit with the Metropolitan Opera and, of course, the immersive experience of Toledo Opera. I'm not answering your question, am I?
Not yet. That's okay.
I'm trying to avoid it. What was the question again?
What have been your top, like, two or three moments from this season?
From the podcast,
from seeing one of the operas, from...
I love seeing the audience react in such a positive fashion. And I mean, like, the audience in the house, but also the audience, like, at the gala, the people that have the pocketbooks, you know, or board members or whatever they are. I love to see how they interact with the company. And so, you know, those moments are precious to me. I mean, the singing is great. The orchestra is great. It's all great. I enjoy it.
Who is your favorite podcast guest? Besides me, I'm the co-host. I wasn't a guest.
You've been listening to Opera Out of the Box, a co-production of WGTE Public Media and Toledo Opera, with additional support from Ohio Humanities. You can find previous episodes online at our website, WGTE.org. And of course, you can dive into all things Toledo Opera at their website, ToledoOpera.org. I want to thank my guests today, James Norman, Kevin Bilsma, and Leah Whitaker from Toledo Opera. I'm your host, Brad Cresswell, and this has been Opera Out of the Box.